Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour on this, the 24th day of April, 2015, and this is Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go to jump into the chat room, the wide-ranging, free-flowing, occasionally raucous, otherwise just doggone enjoyable evening conversation that takes place when the program is live, which is between the hours of 6 and 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time in the U.S. Yep, you go there, you click on chat room, you pick yourself out a screen name, you pick yourself out a password, and bang, you're in. And good evening as we get rolling to Mr. Gibson and to longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who will be seeing over things this evening. Good evening, Carol in Australia wandering in. More folks will be wandering by as the show progresses. We don't stand on ceremony or stand tapping our toe outside the chat room door, waiting for the tardy folks to show up and be publicly shamed. No, we don't do that. Just not how we are. So it is. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And it's been a lovely day here in wild, wonderful, almost level West by Cole, Virginia stand. Bit windy. Might cool. We're not going to see 70 degrees again until a week from tomorrow, apparently. So it'll be a mite brisk. It got down into the low 40s last night. Not quite time to put the heater away. And as I'm figuring out right about now, it's not quite time to put away the heated floor mat for my get cold pretty easy feet. It's nice and toasty down there on the floor right now, and I'm liking it a lot. Thanks again to Sparky a couple of years ago for helping out with keeping my feet from becoming little icicles at the ends of my legs. So yeah, Friday on the Front. Some thanks to send out. Thank you to Ron, and thank you to Michael and Madison. Thank you to Thomas. And thank you very kindly to Chris, all of whom have helped us dig a little bit of the way out of the hole yet again. We're not out of the hole. We've got about $800 to go to get to the end of April. And frankly, given the number of people who tune in on Friday on the Front Porch, I'm gonna make that call for this evening. Now, last night I did my periodic experiment just to remind myself of why it is necessary to mention fundraising as much as I hate to do it. I went the entire program without saying a word about it, and except for our buddy Mo Liberal, it didn't happen until the very end after I had. And thank you to Ron and to Michael and Madison for helping out in that regard. It was big. It was huge. And it's what helps keep... Look, I wish I was independently wealthy. I made a little bit of money out doing other stuff last month. I poured it into the horn. That's what we've been doing for years now. But the fact of the matter is, absent any advertisements for buy gold now, there's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best hedge against inflation, and it helps make right-wing companies rich, 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 rich. Buy gold now. You can count it while you're lying on your Swedish mattress developed with foam engineered and by NASA as you listen to the dulcet tunes, sounds of Flush Flimball on your Bose Wave radio as you wait for your herbal hair growth remedy to take effect and grow hair both on your head and on the bowling ball that you will soon be lifting off of said Swedish mattress with your Auric vacuum cleaner. None of that. So that's why we try to raise a little bit of money every evening. And thank you very kindly to all those who do help out, because there is no horn without you. It's a community. It's not me. Okay? So the PayPal button is, and the whole interface, really, it's not a button so much as it is an interface, is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. You can ignore the more pushy aspects there and just put in enough information to get you to the next screen where you go to PayPal or credit card. You know, MasterCard works, Visa card works, whatever. And that's how we keep this all going. Day by day, week by week, month by month, and in fact, for 10 years now, year by year. You can also participate in keeping the horn on the air via the U.S. Postal Service if you prefer to do that. Well, the best way to go about that is to, well, send checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, not to Bob Kincaid, to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And if you want to do that, shoot me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and that way I can let Boss Man Wayne know to keep an eye on the mailbox and that he won't have to use his spider-proof gloves when he reaches into the echo chamber because, well, lately the spiders have just about chewed the gloves right off of his hands. The glories of family life. Got the little tap on the shoulder. Hey, Dad, Mom said she needs the car keys. Okay. So, Friday on the front porch, fundraising, chat room. Okay, we've gotten that all out of the way. Of course, for anyone new to the program, and I don't know, I guess once in a while there is someone like that. But for anyone new to the program, it is worth noting that this is Friday on the Front Porch. Friday on the Front Porch is reserved for what we call the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable of just regular folks who somehow manage to be part of the group that helps to carry this country day in and day out on their backs. We carry the 1% on our backs. We carry, our betters on our backs, the millionaires, the hedge fund managers, the titans of industry, the executive class. Yeah, we carry them on our backs. Yes, I'm broadcasting. Oh, my God, not this again, please. Hang on a minute. Just got a query. Are you broadcasting? Yes, I'm broadcasting. Okay, thank you, Mr. Gibson. Thank you, Sparky. Yes, I am broadcasting. I don't think I could have taken one of the... No, not this evening. No. Not two Friday on the Front Porches in a row. No, no website issues either. Come on. Hang on here. Oh, website issues. Guess so. White Rose stream is fine, but the website ain't. Stand by, please. All right, so apparently the website is down. Sorry about that. Well, that being the case, anyone trying to contribute is out of luck. And let me just mention, that if you do still want to go through PayPal, just go to PayPal. You go to your own PayPal and use my email address, bobkincaid@gmail.com. That's what the Horn account is tied to, bobkincaid@gmail.com. And remember, select sending money to friends and family, and that'll save you the transfer fee.
Damn it!
I hate it when this stuff happens. I have no idea what's going on. One of these days. Because things are running a little sideways. Let's run over to the Gizmo line real quick. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Can you hear me?
I do.
Okay. Yeah, something's going on there. Chat room's down.
No, the chat room's up.
Oh, it is. I tried to get in about four times because it says internal server.
Oh no, that's because the main Horn website is down. But the let's see. Do you use Facebook or anything like that or?
No.
Okay. Well, there's a back door to the chat room is all there, and folks are in there now.
Dang it.
Okay, I'm getting a new message now. It just says that the Java thing's out of date.
The Java thing is a separate issue, but apparently there's a 500 internal server error relative to the website itself.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting when I was trying to get on, but it's okay. You know, it's not a big deal. We can get through it. As long as everybody else is able to get in the chat room, that's fine.
A few folks are in there.
Mad Mike and SC would join you, but I just can't seem to get there from here.
I'm glad you joined us via phone.
Yeah.
Hey, you got a pencil and paper?
Do I?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It would take a little bit of doing. Wait, hang on.
I'm loading my update. I'm gonna try and get in. Something like this has happened to me before. And then when I reload software, it seems sometimes it seems.
No. I'm seeing it here. There's an internal server error. But it just loaded, so that's a happy thing.
Yeah, we'll give it a little while, see what happens here. It might actually work.
Site's back up now.
Okay. Well, I'll log on as soon as my update finishes. I'll log back on.
Okay, good deal. Yeah, a Java update came around not too long back, and it tormented me for a while until I relented. I relented and let it run.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I hate to do that sometimes, but you kind of have to.
Yeah, it's unavoidable.
Well, you want to talk a little bit?
Absolutely. I had a couple of stuff lined up for the. For the filibobster, but let's just jump right in. What's on your mind, Mike?
I'm really about to get aggravated with this guy we got at the White House. I really am.
What this done?
Well, it's really pretty much everything, but the latest stuff that he's doing with I don't know if you watched the little press he gave about the drone strikes that killed the Americans.
Yeah, yesterday. That pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you listen to what he said and stuff, it's really, really ridiculous.
Well, the ridiculousness continued today. But to be fair, one of the questions I asked yesterday was what would this have been like, had this been a message delivered by a dim leader? And I realize that's a low bar, Mike. It's a very low bar, but I remember just by way of way back when George started his war against the people of Iraq, in which he killed 1 million innocent civilians.
Yeah,
remember that? I do.
I do, absolutely.
There was a after the coalition was formed and everything. There was a story that went around about one day. One morning after the war was underway, Dick Cheney came walking into the Oval Office, pretty as you please, well, no, horrifying as you please, really, and looked at George, and George was just sitting there slumped over his president and desk, weeping madly. And Dick says, Mr. President, what's wrong? And George just points to a little headline in the newspaper, says, Brazilian killed in Iraq. And Dick Cheney looks at him and says, well, yes, Mr. President, it's a war. At which point, dim leader looks up at him, tears streaming down his face, distraught, half mad with grief, and says, good God, you monster, do you know how many's in a Brazilian?
Yeah, I remember that one.
It's an oldie but a goodie.
Yeah, it is.
And so, just by comparison, not that this is the Barack Obama Defense Network, it's not. We take plenty of issues with him here. I can't envision dim leader apologizing. He did. The problem is that this is not a Barack Obama specific problem, Mike, as far as I can see. This is a
other than the drone strikes continuing and not negotiating for the release. If you remember, just a short while ago they did negotiate for the release of a CIA agent and some other stuff. I mean, it depends on who you are as well as not the negotiation.
Well, I think that may be an actual legitimate issue. And other countries negotiate for the release of hostages. But remember, this is a policy that was carved in stone and brought down from Sinai by St. Ronnie of Raygun.
We do not negotiate with terrorists, Mommy.
You do remember that they released a lot of people that were being held for some people that they had of ours. You remember that, right? It's recent.
Yeah.
And yet, this guy, I think his name is Weinstein, he was on video pleading for the government to negotiate for his release.
And he wrote a handwritten note asking for the media to bring pressure on the Obama administration to try to get him home.
Yeah. But I mean, this did happen. And, of course, this has been going on for 2 to 3 years on the two people, okay? And uh, but, but in his press release, he was talking about you know, it's just terrible how many years they've taken away from these people's families. So, of course, he took the rest of the years away with the drone strike. That if there would have been any after, if there was a release. But then again, look at how many people we have unlawfully imprisoned for, well, 15 years, you know, nearly.
Guantanamo, yeah.
Yeah, and how many lives, you know, and people have we separated from their families all this time and still doing it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's one thing. Okay, that's one thing about this, you know, our current president. The other thing about it is he keeps pushing for this fast-track authority for the TPP and the you know, the TTIP, and you know he's being supported wholeheartedly by Republicans and a lot of Democrats. Okay, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you
You know, flat out saying, well, you know, Elizabeth Warren's wrong. Yeah, that bugs me a little bit because we have. As a person who tries to engage in at least a modicum of analytical thinking and evidence-based decision-making, I don't know how in the world he can say she's wrong when we don't have any way to judge that. And I quit following the trust me school of thought long about the first time I lost a $5 bill on a Carnival Midway. Yeah, trust me, son, you'll win next time.
You should use the old Russian adage, you know, trust but verify.
Right, and where the TPP is concerned, we don't get that verify part because, and this is extremely bothersome. I had a note from Kelly about this yesterday or the day before. This idea that businesses that might be affected by the TPP can see the guts of the thing, but your average ordinary garden variety American worker who might probably damned well lose his or her job out of it. Now we can't.
Or worse, yeah. And the world and the environment and everything else. We can't see any of that. You know, it's just this, that's not for us. It's strictly for, you know, for them to do. And you know, this is just so wrong. This is one of the things that I was telling you about why we can't. You know, Hillary Clinton is not going to be the next president of the United States. Even though she may be the presumptive Democratic nominee, I can tell you straight up, she's not going to get elected. There's no way she can get elected, even if it's between her and Republicans, she's not going to get elected. And you know, the straight up reason for it is she remains silent on this whole thing regarding, well, regarding everything we talk about. She remains silent on it. She keeps her issues that she wants to debate or talk about very narrowly focused to avoid any controversy. Okay, and the progressives in America are tired of this. They are so tired of this same bullshit day after day, month after month.
But the question, Mike, becomes this: what? And I'm sorry, I keep coming back to this, but what is the alternative? President Paul?
No, I mean, as horrible as that sounds. Okay, and it does sound horrible. Okay, as horrible as that sounds, it's probably going to happen if something doesn't happen in our electoral system either. You're going to have to get a really, really strong progressive Democrat that's going to challenge this thing completely and honestly, or the progressive Democrats are not coming to the polls. There's no way that I can go down there and pull a lever for Hillary Clinton. I don't care who she's running against. I will go down there and do a write-in. I'll vote for somebody else, but I will not vote for her. And I worked hard, so hard, Bob, to get Barack Obama or any Democrat elected back in the Bush years in 2000.
Well, anybody who was doing get out the vote for Barack Obama in South Carolina earns my respect. That ain't easy.
Well, I mean, I not only did it, I did it on conservative radio talk shows like you and I are talking now. I put it right up there in front. And the thing about it is, we feel so damn betrayed by all of these people. Every one of these damn Democrats that are up there now, and the presumptive nominee, you know, and Hillary Clinton. Even though she's a woman, I mean that's a plus. But when you look at her actual policies and what she stands for, it's not helpful to any of us. It's not. And this is why the Democrats lost in all these elections after Barack Obama got in, because they realized that they weren't going to do anything, and they're staying away from the polls because there's no point in going. There just isn't. That's why we lost the House and Senate and the rest of it. That's why we lost.
Right, and frankly, that's I think that's a real risk in 2016, because lack of voter turnout always inures to the benefit of the Republicans.
Yeah, and when you don't feel that you have a reason to go there, and even if you do, your conscience won't let you vote this way if you know anything. If you're paying attention at all, you know what I'm saying? If you're just watching even a little bit and you see what your Democrats are doing all the way up to the president, vice president, the cabinet, all of them, if you look at what they're doing, how can you possibly go and support it?
Well, I trust that is not necessarily a rhetorical question, Mike, and here's my answer. And I don't like, and let me say from the outset, I don't like my answer. It is April of 2015. The primaries do not start until late January of 2016. And that's when you start getting your South Carolina, your New Hampshire, and your Iowa. That leaves pretty much, let's see, 9 months to see if there's going to be a primary challenge. Now, I don't know as much as I would like to about Martin O'Malley, but what little I hear from him, he's saying some of the right things. He sounds kind of John Edwardsy, you know, without the sex problems.
Yeah, well, you know,
Jim Webb's talking. I think he's probably more conservative than Hillary is.
Yeah, I think so.
I know the I want a pony wing of the Democratic Party, and they're getting to the point where they don't just want a pony, they want a daggum unicorn. I know they want Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, I was gonna say forget a pony, we just want a donkey.
And then there's the wing that just wants Howard Dean or some reasonable facsimile of John F. Kennedy or FDR. None of whom, I don't do this for 3 hours a night to, you know, satisfy some mad urge of ego. But none of those people are going to run.
You know, Bob.
I mean, if they do run, it's going to be a symbolic run. If Bernie Sanders, let's put it this way, let me be 100% clear. If Bernie Sanders decides to run as a Democrat in the Democratic primaries for the nomination for the presidency of the United States, I will support Bernie Sanders, and the race will be over by May. But May is when we get our primaries here in West Virginia, and I will march my happy ass to the polling place, and I will joyfully vote for Bernie Sanders. And that'll be the end of the primary process.
And I understand what you're saying, but here's the deal, Bob. It's happened all over the world. It can happen here. We've had the Arab Spring. We've had the stuff in Greece and Spain and other places. It's time for something to happen in America. It's time to happen right now. I mean, right freaking now, because we've got almost a year and a half before we actually have to do this election of this most important person in the world. And my God, if we can't do something, if we can't get together and spread the word and get somebody that's worthwhile electing to that office that will actually do some things that need to be done, what's the damn point? I mean, really, what is the point? We've got to do it, Bob. I mean, that's the only way that anybody is ever going to save the United States of America short of a revolution. This is the only way you can do it. You've got to put somebody in that office that will make it happen. And Barack Obama could have made it happen. He had the political capital when he got in there. I don't care whether, you know, what the issues were with the control of the Senate and stuff, but eventually he had all of it. But he had the political capital, and he had the power in his hands to do what needed to be done, and he failed to do it. And he still fails to do it. Every time I see him on television, he is failing to do it. And it's all in his hand. All of the drone strikes, all of the stuff is in his power. All of the CIA oversight is in his power. When Edward Snowden said what he did and took his risk and went out there and told the American people what our government was doing to him, it's within the president's power to say, come on home, there's not going to be a prosecution, I'm not going to use 100-year-old laws, you know, to put you in jail, you know, like we do everybody that acts against the empire. I'm not going to do it. Damn it, Bob. Barack Obama has had the power from day fucking one to get something done here, and he has not done it. Now, it's time for something else, and Hillary damn Clinton is not the answer to this problem. I know the Republicans are an answer to the problem. Don't get me wrong. I know they're not the answer to the problem. They are the fucking problem.
But let's be clear here. The answer to the problem of saying I won't vote for Jeb, but I won't vote for Hillary, isn't an answer either. What I said earlier is true. Low voter turnout inures to the benefit of the Republicans, and that's just, I mean, that might as well be a vote for Jeb. That might as well be a vote for Jeb.
That's exactly why I'm saying we've got nearly a year and a half to get something done. People better damn well get on the bandwagon and get something done, because when 2016 rolls around, November, if we haven't done something, we haven't prepared ourselves for this, we're going to be looking at the same goddamn shit we've been looking at.
Well, I want to throw a couple of possibilities out there. I offer the same caveat that I constantly offer, and that is that we are not electing the president of a republic. We are electing the administrator of a crumbling empire.
Yes.
Okay? It's one thing to say yes, Mike. It's another thing to comprehend that all the way down to your toenails.
I'm with you.
And toward that end, that's why I said we're not going to get an FDR type. We're not going
to
get a John F. Kennedy type.
We have to.
No, we don't have. No. Empires don't do that, Mike. Don't do that. That's like being in a space capsule saying we have got to have sails and a rudder. They don't work that way.
If we don't do it, it's over this time. This time is the last time, because it was during this presidency that we got the Citizens United. During this presidency, we got all this money pumped in from these corporations, and there is no way that we're going to be able to recover from a 2016 election of one of these idiotic Republican presidents and Senates and Congresses. There's three branches in this government. There's the executive, legislative, and the judicial. The executive is as powerful as any of the rest of them, and actually more powerful than the other two. He can do this. One person can do this. What we have to do is make...
Well, see, I'm not necessarily... I can't take cards in that game. This system is not designed to be run by a benevolent dictator. You've got to have some cooperation somewhere along the way.
I know what you're saying, but what cooperation have we had so far? If there's a Democrat in there, we've had no cooperation. And not only that,
right?
Well,
the
Democratic Senate, we had no cooperation, and they were able to stymie everything that anybody wanted to do, even though they really didn't want to do a whole hell of a lot. That's obvious by who we put in his cabinet, and you know, the whole thing is obvious that there wasn't a lot that they wanted to do.
Well, hang on, Mike, wait. Okay. I want to go back to the reference to Citizens United, okay?
Okay.
That's not Barack Obama's doing.
I know, it's the Supreme Court.
And before it was the Supreme Court's doing, it was a right wing group. God, did they have Coke? Were they Coke affiliated too? And this much is true. And again, I'm not campaigning for her, but I have to live in a fact-based world. It was just a few days ago that Mrs. Clinton said, we may require a constitutional amendment to get rid of Citizens United.
And now, you know that's not going to happen, Bob. You know that can't happen.
Wait, Mike. How do you want it to go? How do you want to get rid of it then?
Well, there's actually no way to get rid of it other than actually changing the government from the top down. This is the only way you're going to be able to get this done at this point. You are too far down the road to corporate fascism to do anything that's going to affect, you know, the total outcome of this game without a change at the very, very top with somebody that can do stuff that will change it and change the minds of people.
Okay, wait. Okay, so what kind of change?
All the changes, Bob. All the changes need to happen in our government secrecy. That needs to all change. It needs to be all brought out in the open. He has the power to do that. Barack Obama has the power right now. He could release Chelsea Manning from jail. He could bring Edward Snowden back home. He could get Julian Assange out of the damn embassy locked up over there in damn England, and get him back to the United States and say, look, let's have the conversation. We need to have this conversation. The people of America need to have this conversation. Let's get it done, okay? Don't worry about prosecution. There's not going to be any. He can do that, Bob. Why doesn't he do it?
I'm not sure he can. I'm not so sure he can.
He can do it, Bob. It was him that decided to pull over the Ecuadorian president's airplane on the way back because he thought that Edward Snowden might be on it. For God's sakes, Bob, he's the one doing it. He's the one that's exercising the espionage laws that he's using to prosecute all these people. He's doing it. It's not somebody else. It's not some nefarious stranger up there. It's a goddamn
It's the executive structure. I mean, Mike, we started out talking about the drone business. At no point, for instance, with this particular drone strike, the one that killed the hostages. At no point in time did he say yay or nay on that drone strike.
Oh, you understand, he absolutely did. He has to give the authority for these things to happen.
They don't.
It may not be individual authority for an individual strike. He has given blanket authority for those strikes, not only carried out by the military, but also carried out by the CIA. He does that. He has that authority, and he is the one that I got in charge of that.
Because it bothered me as much as it did when the news broke. I've spent a good bit of time trying to digest and comprehend the process as it was being described and put out there. Now, either everybody's lying, or what they what they said is true. And my position is, you know, they said, you know, we had near certainty, we had near continuous surveillance, near. When near is apparently the same thing as the difference between throwing horseshoes and hand grenades to them. They followed process. It is the process that is at fault. It is the process that is flawed. It is the mindset behind those processes that is problematic. Okay? But
who okays that process?
But Barack Obama does not sit there and say, yes, this drone strike, no, that drone strike, maybe this
one. Right.
It doesn't happen
that way.
There is, executive.
He accepted full responsibility for the strike in his news conference.
Well, of course he did. He's the president.
He understands that these drone strikes would not be happening without his approval, blanket support for them. It wouldn't be happening. It would not.
No.
If Barack Obama decided tomorrow, okay, we're gonna stop these drone strikes, you think they'd stop? Would they? If he ordered them to be stopped, would it stop?
I don't know.
He is the head of the armed forces of the United States. If he says they stop, by God, they stop.
Are you certain of that? Because I'm not.
I am absolutely certain of that.
You're certain. You're certain.
Wait. If you have a war with somebody,
well,
he is the one that prosecutes the war.
Mike.
Yeah.
Wait.
Go ahead. I'm stopping.
Certain. I'm not. Because, see, we're talking about the CIA. The CIA.
Yeah.
Wait. My turn. The CIA is not a part of the Pentagon. The CIA is not a part of the military. The President of the United States is, in fact, during time of war, and that's kind of an important thing there, and this is not time of war because the Congress has not declared one. During time of war, the President is Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces. Okay? Now, granted, we throw Commander-in-Chief around like feather pillows at a Friday night sleepover, but it is a specific constitutional term, and when in time of war he is commander in chief, the president is. Now, with regard to the CIA, how many different accounts, how many different instances since the CIA was created do you need to have in order to find out, in order to come to the conclusion that no, the president doesn't just stop the CIA doing things. The CIA does shit when it wants to do shit.
They do, but you know, that's because the president lets them do it, because the president does have ultimate oversight over that group.
Buck stops here. Harry Truman said that, and most presidents try to adhere it. You know what? John F. Kennedy, after the Bay of Pigs, and John F. Kennedy got screwed with the Bay of Pigs, but when the Bay of Pigs went sideways, John Kennedy said, success has 100 fathers, but failure is an orphan. And he said, I take full responsibility for the failure of the Bay of Pigs. When in fact, he had next to nothing to do with the Bay of Pigs. It's part of the nasty part of the job. But Mike, the problem here is that I understand your angst, I understand your frustration, but I don't think you and I are on the same page understanding who and where and what we the people of the United States are right now. We're a goddamn hair on a gnat's ass away from being subjects instead of citizens. Okay?
And we are
part of an empire. We are not part of if you somehow dug up and reanimated the moldering corpse of James Madison and brought him to life in 2015, he would look and he would go, what the f- is this?
Really? You remember the same president you're talking about, John F. Kennedy, in Operation Northwood? You remember that? Where they were planning the CIA and the Pentagon were all planning the invasion of Cuba, and they were going to, destroy some of their own ships and stuff and blame it on the Cubans so we could have a war.
Sure. Let me give you a sampling of the response coming in from the Horn community. Asa, for instance, says, if Obama says stop the drones, they'll JFK his ass in a minute. Okay?
Now, see, that's the point. But, you know, you've got to have somebody in that office that isn't afraid of that. You must have somebody willing to take the reins in that highest office in the world and do what needs to be done to set it right. If you keep putting these people in there that are beholden to, you know, just corporate cronies beholden to these people, that is all you're ever going to get. And after we cross 2016, the Citizens United, to me, and I think if people would just think about it for a minute, that is the crossing of the Rubicon. You cannot go back from there. You've opened the floodgates. It's all downhill from here unless you can change it. And the only place that you and I have a chance to change this is at the very top. And that's what these people over there in Europe and in Greece and Spain and Portugal and other places are starting to realize, that you really can't do this unless you take it right to the top.
Well, first of all, an Arab Spring or even a Greek or Italian or Spanish style manifestation of discontent is, and I hesitate to use the word, Mike, but I will use it here, never going to happen here. Okay, let me share with you something from Michael in Madison. Subject line: Arab Spring in the U.S. Didn't Wisconsin already try the whole Arab Spring thing in 2011?
Yeah.
Arguably. Arguably. Wait, Mike.
Okay,
this is a conversation.
I'm sorry.
Arguably, before most Americans even noticed the Arab Spring was happening, Michael says. I hate to say it, because I support everyone who is involved on our side, but other than getting a lot of harmless people arrested by Scott Walker's goon squad, what good did it do?
Wait. Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm just not seeing an American version of an Arab Spring anytime soon, Michael says. The cable is still on. And if you can't afford that, hell, now you got HBO Now in addition to Netflix and Hulu. And more importantly, even if we get out and stomp our feet, it seems the powers that be will ignore us. We don't do everything, Mike, about the system of government as it exists is designed specifically to avoid revolution. Okay? It's not a very good system, okay? It's not a very good system for getting things done. Our system of government does not respond to crisis at all well. Okay? We make happy accidents. But Mike, we are not going to. There's not going to be a revolution. Okay, it ain't going
to
happen.
If you look back at the Constitution, the Second Amendment stuff wasn't put in there for hunting deer. It was by God put in there to make sure that if your government become
no, Mike, the Second Amendment was put. No, you're right. The Second Amendment was not put in there for hunting deer. The Second Amendment was put in there for hunting slaves.
Yes. I understand what you're saying, but if you take what the guy just wrote to you on the email, and he's talking about Scott Walker in Wisconsin, and here's the problem, Bob. Our president had the opportunity right then to jump in Wisconsin and put on his track shoes and go out there and march that picket line, and he did nothing. He sat there on his ass in the Oval Office and let the people of Wisconsin get beaten down. Same thing he did when we had Occupy Wall Street, Occupy everywhere. He just sat there, shut his mouth, and he let the police run the people out of the parks. This is the problem, Bob. That's the problem. The people want something else. They know they need something else. They can't keep going with what they've got. But you need somebody sitting in that goddamn office up there that will do what the fuck needs to be done, or we're going to go down to hell in a handbasket.
Well, I'm afraid, Mike, that maybe your definition of what needs to be done and others' definition of what needs to be done may be a bit at odds.
I'm not calling for our revolution. That's the wrong way to do it. We don't need the bloodshed. But if you have help at the top, we've got nobody, Bob. We've got no fucking body helping us.
Let's look at it this way. Let's say that we wave our magic wand and we get unicorn sparkle pony Obama, who's going to do all the progressive things that we want him to do. And let's say number one is stop the drones. Okay. Well, the minute he says, I've decided this day to stop the barbaric practice of drone strikes, impeachment hearings will open the day following, okay?
On what grounds?
Were you here in the 90s? Because I was. Since when does a Republican Congress need grounds for impeachment?
I'm on Social Security. I was around for all of it, okay? I'm on Social Security and Obamacare. I was around for all of it. Okay, go ahead.
Well, they don't need grounds. There's already a noisy minority that could quickly become a plurality of Republicans who would just as soon impeach him for the color of his skin. Okay.
Yeah, that just depends on what the definition of the word is. I mean, yes, I remember this whole.
Okay,
thing.
And so they've got.
They've got themselves
a tidy little majority in the Senate, and they've got Democrats like Joe Manchin who would probably mugwump right along with them.
So you see that there's really no help for us from the Democrats. There's no help.
There's no help from the Republicans. There's no help from the Libertarians. There ain't no help coming.
If there ain't no help coming, then we just might as well just back our ears and accept this corporate fascism and become part of it, because that's all we got. That's all we got to look forward to.
Take care of community. Take care. Solve the problems close to home that you can solve. Work on the things that need work. Work on the things that most desperately need to be worked on where you are.
You can't even do that because when TPP and TCIP and all this stuff passes, okay, that's going to take away any possibility you have of doing a goddamn thing in your own community, because if it involves environment or anything else that you care about, okay, that shit's going down the toilet just as soon as that stuff passes. You understand what I'm saying to you? Corporations will tell you, by God, what you can do and what you can't do, and if we don't do something about it before this fucking happens, we might as well just bend over and kiss our asses goodbye, because it's over. And the only chance we've got, the only snowball chance in hell we've got, is something happening in 2016 that means a real fucking change, not hokey, changey bullshit that we got, you know, 6 years ago, that you know, we worked for and really thought there was going to be something there, and it ended up just being a big pile of stinking shit. That's the facts of it.
Well, I'll tell you this much, Mike. I know what we had for 8 years under Dim Leader. I remember signing statements.
Ask for a bigger pile of shit than that.
I remember signing statements. I remember a war that was entered into and prosecuted based on lies that took the entire next term of the presidency under Barack Obama to get out of, and we're still not out of Afghanistan.
That's
okay,
right. We're not even out of Iraq, and we're talking about Iraq.
Well, we pulled out, and then we pulled out, and now we're going back.
Do you really see a big change happening on the horizon here? There's not. And if these people have their way, there's going to be another fucking war in Iran, and all of this shit's going to just be sliding further down. There's got to be a major change. And if we can't make it happen in 2016, it's really, really over. And if we don't see some politicians up here, I say politicians, some real candidates of the people, some real statesmen, to come up and tell the people what's really wrong and what it really takes to fix these problems, we are going to be...
Who are they? Who are they, Mike?
Well, you have some people that do a little bit, and those are the Elizabeth Warrens and the Bernie Sanders and some of these others that will actually speak up. What's our little guy that ran for president last time? You know who I'm talking
what,
about.
What, Kucinich?
Yeah, Dennis.
Well, Dennis, you know, Dennis is out of the government.
I know, there's not any reason why he couldn't run for president, though, but all I'm saying is none of this is going to change if we can't get our own progressive community to back somebody that's actually representing
us. Mike, our own progressive community doesn't have enough votes to elect a damn national dog catcher, let alone a president.
Well,
I mean, I think, in certain rooms where they have 12-step meetings, you'll see a sign in there that says reality spoken here.
I know it's not like herding cats. It is like wrangling butterflies. But here's the thing: if you look if you go to Common Dreams or any of these other websites, you'll see whole lists of progressive sites, okay, that you can go to for news and information, talk radio, all of these things. But what you need is to pull those people all together with a common theme of let's make a fucking change for real. Not a hopey changey, you know, wish we had some change. Looks like there's going to be change. There ain't no change. We need real change now. And it better happen by 2016, because if it doesn't, we are really beyond help at that point. We really are.
Well, look, I'm the one who says we live in a crumbling empire, okay?
I agree with you.
Sometimes in crumbling empires, you're left to watch the crumbling. Okay? I used to, way back, I used to get shit for referring to this country as our once great nation. What do you mean? Oh, we're still great? America's still great? USA? Okay? No, we're not.
And our president we
carve up hard paved roads to turn them back into gravel. We have an infrastructure that is falling apart. Japan just set a new record for its magnetic levitational train, somewhere around 300 miles an hour. We can't fix the tracks that goddamned Amtrak runs on. Okay, I could go on for the rest of the night. You know, I do these little local stories, and sometimes I wonder, you know, is this even worth mentioning on a show that's freaking global? And when I go, no, okay, but sometimes I say yes, Mike, because they may be little local bits of nothing, but they are signposts on the road to on the road of this collapsing empire we're on. The problem, I think you're elucidating it fairly well for progressive people, is I don't want to vote for Hillary, and I understand that, but I am going to insist on reality spoken here, and reality spoken here means that come November of 2016, you're gonna get a choice between a corporate supported Democrat and a Koch brothers old money wild eyed Republican anti government supported Republican, and that's going to be your choice. I want a unicorn is not going to be on your ballot, and for all of her good ideas, Jill Stein doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of winning the presidency. Not because she's a bad person or a poor candidate, but because we have a duality system that is first past the post and admits of nothing else. Okay?
Yeah.
If a third party candidate ever wins the presidency, it will be because one of the two parties has become so weak as to collapse. And we will be right back where we started, Mike, in a two-party system. Everything in American history points in that direction.
And it doesn't matter which of the two parties we have collapses, Bob, because the empire continues on just like it always has, just like it always will. They use the idea that we're broke and we can't do this. We took a nickel to get, you know, a cartload of shit, you know, across from New York to L.A. They couldn't get a part from, you know, from Washington to Richmond, okay? But the fact of the matter is we're not broke. We're the most powerful, the richest nation in the world. We spend all of our money on the wrong things. The priorities are all fucked up. All the money goes into empire defense building
that third party candidate is going to have to be a coalition candidate. That's how, you know, that's kind of how Abraham Lincoln snuck into the White House, if you will, because the Democratic Party was in disarray. The Whig Party, you know, Abraham Lincoln started out as a Whig, but he signed on with the new Republican Party, and it had a lot of different, you had New England abolitionists, and you had Midwestern Republican, you know, freedom Wolverines types, and that's how he gets in there. That having been said, I will grant Ralph Nader this much. He said that, you know, the country needs somebody who can run as a third party candidate who can unify progressives and libertarians. Well, we all need a better 5-cent cigar too. When I read that article, I was pretty well convinced that Ralph had gotten into the brown acid, because the conclusion he reached was, you know who we need? Rand Paul. And I thought, well, Ralph, the Aricept isn't working anymore, is it? Because that's terrifying. I mean, it's absolutely terrifying, because that candidate upon whom what he described as, you know, anti big business libertarians, which what and progressives can agree on, you know, behold the coelacanth. We might as well be waiting for the Diplodocus candidate, because it don't exist, Mike.
I told you that Barack Obama wasn't my first choice during the 2008 run, and that Edwards was, because he spoke up against the corporations. But when Edwards dropped out, I gave Barack Obama my full support, and I supported him not just verbally with friends, but in public venues, okay. And when he was elected, okay, I continued to support him until I saw what he did. Okay, it wasn't until his 4-year term was up and he was being reelected that I decided I couldn't do this again. There's no way I could do this again. your vote, I voted green. I voted for the Green Party candidates. And I will do this again in 2016 because I'm not going to go out there and vote for a continuation of the same damn thing we've got now, because I don't care which, whether it's a Democrat or Republican the Koch brothers give their money to, whoever they give it to, are owned lock, stock, and barrel, and they're going to do exactly what these people want them to do.
And so again, and I need to wrap this up because we've got to start the Friday on the Front Porch portion of the program. But again, I come back to the central question: what's the solution? There isn't one.
Well,
there's no unicorn candidate. There's no sparkle pony candidate. There's not even a pony candidate. And
there better be one by 2016.
Well, I mean, the list of possibilities is pretty damn narrow. So far, it's Martin O'Malley. Who's being talked about? Martin O'Malley, Jim Webb, and
those aren't going to get it.
Maybe, you know, Bernie Sanders running as a drag the discussion toward left of center candidate. But I suspect Mrs. Clinton will mop the floor with a lot of them because it's about the money.
She very well may wrap up the Democratic nomination, but she's not going to be president. Trust me on this. I'll come back and talk to you. I may talk to you anyway between now and then, but 2016, she will not be elected president of these United States. I promise you that. And I told you why she's not going to be. But one more thing during Obama's press conference. One more time, he did not miss the opportunity to talk about American exceptionalism. And that is one of the biggest fucking problems we've got.
If I never heard that phrase again, it would be fine by me.
One more time, it would be you know, one time too many.
What's interesting is if you would check out Dr. Bill, and in fact, I encourage you to call him with some of these questions. He'll be back on the air next week, from 1 to 3, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Call in and ask Dr. Bill to explain the real American exceptionalism, and it will blow your mind.
Well,
because
the
sort of media branded idea of American exceptionalism is just a cheap excuse to blow up brown people. The phrase actually means something, but it doesn't. Well, you know, it's one of those Inigo Montoya moments. I don't think it means what they think it means because it doesn't.
Yeah. And the truth be known, there's nothing exceptional about these people except the exceptional amount of ignorance that pervades the population of the United States of America. That's the only fucking thing exceptional about America is we're so damn ignorant.
Well, I got a note coming in from Danny in Louisiana, Stan, that you might find interesting, Mike. He says, if Mike is implying that we need a president with the balls to have his brain shot out onto his wife's lap, then all we get is a few assassinated presidents. On the other hand, I've been saying since 45% of our economy was based on consumer spending that we are in a race to the bottom, and only Americans are stupid enough to be shocked when we win the race and find where we are, the bottom. I think we're all thoroughly fucked, and it's all over but acknowledging it. The only hope is to get the money, special interests, out of politics, and I think that's impossible absent a revolution. But the money has worked so thoroughly... Wait, let Danny have his say.
Oh, okay.
But the money has worked so thoroughly at propagandizing the American public that they will only start a revolution if their sports were taken away and their TVs turned off. And that goes back to what Michael in Madison said a little bit ago about the cable is still on, because that's what I said years ago. There will be no substantial change in this country so long as the cable is on. We are on our way to being Haiti with cable. Danny wraps up saying, I wish I was more optimistic, but sorry. We fucked ourselves a long time ago, only we were too dumbed down to see it. My optimism is to retire to a Central or South American country that this country doesn't bomb, signed Meaningless Danny.
And the revolution will not be televised.
No, Mike, you have yourself.
I'm telling you.
I got a roll here, but you have yourself a good weekend. All right.
Take care. It's always good to talk to you, Bob.
You take care, Mike. Good talking to you. Bye now. Mike, calling from South Carolina, Stan. And, Jack, yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah, I've read, you must, maybe you weren't tuned in, but Danny's been listening from Louisiana Stan for a while. So, because Jack said, how about that? A new Louisianian, Danny. I haven't heard Danny before. Well, hopefully you'll hear more from Danny. He keeps threatening that one of these days he's going to screw his courage to the sticking place and call in, which is just dandy anytime. Jack also notes, regarding Mike's call, I'd interject that voting is messed with because of gerrymandering and other Republican cheats on the vote. Well, hell yes, of course. And that points out the fact that this is not a case of I don't know. It's not like when your car runs out of gas and if you just put more gas in it, it'll get back to going. This is the United States political system is a car that's out of gas. The head gasket is blown. The head is warped. We've thrown a rod, and the radiator and the radiator's leaked out all over the ground. I understand Mike's frustration, and because of what I do, I spend a lot of time reading a lot of progressive frustration, and there's a lot of people out there that just doggone it really wish Barack Obama had been the wizard that the Republicans promised us he was going to be. Instead, he turned out to be what Shakespeare say, for his all in all he was a man. And he is a man. And he's a man who's running an empire. And it may be, as Mike says, we may go swirling down the toilet. But I think if we go swirling down the toilet, it won't be solely because of who gets elected president. I think it will be substantially more likely. I mean, come on. President Cruz. Just keep saying that to yourself. And the more you say President Cruz, President Clinton is going to not sound quite so bad. And all we're trying to do is keep the empire trundling along, because you don't want to be around when it collapses. I mean, for all intents and purposes, in many ways, that's what happened with the Great Depression. It was an imperial collapse. It was an economic collapse. But some of the imperialism went with it. Not enough, not all. And FDR, was not exactly bummed out when we got to get into the Second World War. But imagine for a moment an America where the Social Security checks stop coming. I mean, hell, they're not even checks anymore. It's all done electronically now, isn't it? Because, after all, we had to give some of that money to the banksters. Imagine an America where it's not just a matter of cutting food stamps, but eliminating it because it is violative of the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian principles of he who shall not eat, let him starve. All this and more can be yours with President Walker, President Cruz, President Paul, President Bush. Progressives out there hate the sound of the phrase President Clinton. Keep saying President Bush to yourself. And I'll probably piss people off. I'm sorry. But I can't say President Bush or President Cruz, or President Walker, or President Fiorina, or President Christie without wanting to gag and vomit into the handy-dandy horn garbage can over here. And I would love for Hillary Clinton to be that progressive hero we all yearn for. I'd love for a lot of things to happen. I'd love just to have a sponsor for, well, sponsor's kind of an icky word. I'd love to just figure out a way never to have to mention fundraising on this program again. But I have to deal with the realities. I know progressive president versus simply being able to continue our little conversation without doing fundraising seems in no wise similar, but they are. Because for the foreseeable future, that's not going to happen. As I've said before, you only got FDR because of the meltdown brought on by the excesses of the Republican Party from Warren Gamaliel Harding to Herbert Hoover. It's not because America had a sudden yearning for a progressive president. It is because the other alternative was 4 more years of Herbert Hoover. Or 8, or 12, or 16. Because remember, that's before we term limited the president. Ron pointing out, it might be worthwhile to consider with the next Democratic Congress, of course, the creation of an independent agency charged with the responsibility of creating and managing federal electoral boundaries. I dream. I'm just looking for the next windmill. I know. I do the same thing. Let me draw another analogy, and we will. We'll go to the Friday on the Front Porch conversation in a minute. It's like the AIC Act. You know, we got the AIC Act introduced in June. It was June 19th of 2012. 112th Congress. We got it introduced in the 113th Congress, and now it's been introduced in the 114th Congress. And there's always somebody out there who says, well, I know, but, you know, this is not the best time to be introducing bills to end mountaintop removal. After all, they're not going to go anywhere now, do you think? And on one occasion, I responded, okay, great. We won't bother getting the bill reintroduced anymore. We'll just sit and wait until we get on that great jubilee getting up morning a progressive Congress. And you know what's going to be really cool about that progressive Congress? Apparently, the minute it's sworn in, it's going to know exactly what to do and in what order. It's going to have perfect knowledge of what this country needs. And they're going to go in there thinking about poisoned hillbillies, and they're going to introduce the AIC Act and pass it and take care of it. Bullshit! It's not going to happen. If you want a law, you have to advocate for the law. And if you want something done in Congress, you've got to do most of the heavy lifting. The citizens do. Maybe someday, maybe in my lifetime, maybe not. Maybe in yours, maybe not. We'll have another Democratic majority in the Congress. But to have a progressive Congress? Shit. We'll meet the aliens first. Because, among other reasons, the progressives haven't gotten their shit together enough to take power. I mean, I wish it was otherwise. Look at how many people we mention every time we talk about having a progressive presidential candidate. Two names! Two! Sometimes maybe it expands to Sherrod Brown, three. Progressive heroes, okay, we'll add in Al Franken, four. Keith Ellison, five. Raul Grijalva, six. Randy and PA pointing out, you won't get FDR again due to the prevailing pervasive U.S. surveillance. Well, yeah. The two presidents who have done the most to change for the better American culture in the last 150 years are two men who could never in this modern age be elected president, FDR in a wheelchair and Abraham Lincoln, who just looked like a freak. And this country is so image-obsessed. I mean, can you imagine being one of the paid political consultants to the Lincoln campaign in 2015? Sir, give it up. You don't have a chance. It doesn't matter if you grow a beard or not. You're a freak. Jay Cruzen with a note. Love the discussion. Can I add a quote? The role of citizen in our democracy does not end with your vote. America's never been about what can be done for us. It's about what can be done by us together through the hard and frustrating but necessary work of self-governance. Barack Obama, 2012. Jay Cruzen says, I agree with Mike that he's not done all he can do. However, I would ask of him and all the community listening, have you? Well said indeed. With the note, hey, big guy, Fletcher Prouty's secret team and JFK reveal a ton about the CIA. Cheers from Syracuse. Signed, Dan. Thank you, Dan. Thank you for chipping in. That is big help, huge help, and the first help of the evening. Thank you very kindly. You know, we're trying to knock off April here. And we got about $750 bucks to go now. So thank you indeed very, very much. And hopefully other folks can jump in. John Fox tells me, by the way, that he's got a support ticket in with our provider. And here's a dumb question. Could somebody in the chat room please send me via email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, so I don't have to go searching for it. Just send me a link to the back door to the chat room so I can pop in there. And hopefully we'll get that sorted out. If you want to contribute to the program with the website down, just go to paypal.com, and in order to contribute to the horn, just for the recipient, put bobkincaid@gmail.com. And then your amount, and then click sending money to friends and family. And that way you will you won't incur a fee, which is nice. And hopefully we'll have some folks to jump in and give Dan in Syracuse some company. So it is Friday on the front porch. And I did have some other stuff lined up for the filibobster. Maybe we'll get to it during the Friday on the Front Porch portion of the program. Let's see. I suspect we've got Kevin already on the gizmo line. I presume that Sparky has already put out the bat signal. And if you want to be a part of Friday on the Front Porch, if you've never done it before, remember, just send a contact request on Skype, which is incredibly simple to use. Send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, Sparky Dunk, and he'll get you hooked up and ready to roll. So we'll take a little break and get the front porch fired up. And come right back. This is listener-supported. Emphasis on that, listener-supported. Conversation Radio. Trying to get out of the hole. Trying to finish April okay. Desperately trying to get badly needed bill paying done. Listener-supported Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sometimes late when things are real and people share the gift of gab between themselves. Some are quick to take the bait and catch the perfect prize that waits among the shells. But Oz never did give nothing to the Tin Man that he didn't already have. And cause never was a reason for the evening or the Tropic of Sir Galahad. So please believe in me when I say I'm spinning round, 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 round. Smoke glass stained right up, image going down, down. Already have, and cause never was the reason for the evening or the Tropic of Sir Galahad. So please believe in me when I say I'm spinning round, 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 round. Smoke glass stained right up, image going down, down. Already have, and cause never was the reason for the evening or the Tropic of Sir Galahad. So please believe in me. Ooh.
Classic from the 1970s, That's America, and the man. Ooh, icky DJ voice. 24 minutes past the hour, we're a little bit late starting the Friday on the front porch extraordinary, ordinary roundtable. Here's a fun little thing to think about, and I'm actually working on this. You know, I mentioned that we're in the process, and Agnes has been instrumental in all of this, of trying to do a rethink of the rearrange of the studio to bring in a lot more, well, to sort of rethink. And one of these days, because we have the technology, We have the technology. One of these days, there's actually going to be a Friday on the front porch. Mm-hmm. And it'll be, you know, some lovely summer evening. And by God, I will. I'll broadcast live from the front porch or the picnic table or something here at the fabulous Kincaid Mansion. Yeah. So, let's see. Okay, turn off the music. Very good. And let's run over to the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. Well, wait. Because I have a habit of screwing this up, let's go to the phone, the gizmo line first, where I think I'll bet we have Kevin and Bill, correct?
Yes, sir.
Howdy, Bill.
Good evening.
How are you, Kevin?
Good.
Very good, very good. Now let's go over to the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. I just wanted to make sure that I screw up.
Thank you.
I'm trying to get better here. Good evening. Good evening, Sparky.
Hey, Bob, if you ever go out to the outside world to broadcast, I'll have to go to the sit underneath the redwood tree.
That'll be perfect.
Anyway, Kevin.
Yep.
Your package should be in the mail.
Thank you.
And, Bob?
Yes?
Could I do a Have a Show on Me challenge?
That would be awesome if you wanted to.
Okay. I just came into some money.
Oh.
My sister finally sold my parents' stock.
Oh, wow.
So, split it up. Now I also own some stock now in AT&T.
You capitalist, you. Yeah.
Well, I didn't inherit it. You know, my sister, she's the executor of the estate. You know, she's the top one unlisted. And so she had to split it, so she did that. And I sold off Comcast stock. And now I have AT&T stock. They sent me a thing. I can either sell it or just hold it. So I think I'll just hold it.
Probably wise.
And another couple grand, you know, grand taxed on my taxes at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And the little dividend checks you get every once in a while aren't bad.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, Sparky, thanks for shooting me the backdoor link. Okay, let me do this real quick before you jump in on the Have a Show on Me challenge, which like I said is here. I'm not very good at reading URLs, but this is about the only way to go about it for now.
Ron?
Hey, Ron, tell Reverend Craig to quit repeating me.
I got him muted, Bob.
Okay. So, if you want to get into the chat room for this Friday on the front porch, get a pencil, for God's sakes. I can't do this twice. Or a pen. http://client0, the numeral 0, client0.addonchat.com/, this is where it gets complicated, sc.php?id=137054. 137054. And hopefully folks who want to can get in that way. And like I said, John Fox has a trouble ticket in to our host, and hopefully that will be sorted out sooner rather than later. So what was your plan? What was your thought? What was your challenge, Sparky?
Oh, well, just if somebody matches me.
Okay.
By the end of the weekend, I'll send you the money.
Okay. So,
in however form.
Yeah. So Sparky is looking for someone to match $150 which will and he will in turn then, well, basically he's going to double the first 150, the next 150 that come in toward toward hopefully ending April okay and getting a bunch of bills paid. It's getting a little nerve-wracking around here. Okay, so so we have that. Sparky, would you copy the backdoor addy into the Skype chat? Rick was looking to get in.
Rick? Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so let's, in fact, good evening, Rick. How are you?
Oh, he's got a problem.
Oh, okay. Well, Carol's with us in Australia. Good evening, Carol.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm looking forward to reading the Ponerology book.
Oh, good. I think it's really important, even though it's hard to get through.
That much of a challenge, really?
It's just kind of depressing.
Oh, well, hell, that's just another day reading the news trying to prepare for the program. No sweat.
Well, it's actually enlightening in a way that makes sense of so much of the other stuff that you see. It's actually finally have an answer for why you see so much destruction and cruelty. It's actually finally have an answer.
Yep, Ron's still working. Ron's still working out the echo.
It's just weird to hear my own voice coming back. It's like, woo. So anyway, I'm glad you got it. Or you haven't gotten it yet?
No, it hasn't arrived yet. I'm haunting the mailbox looking for it.
It's on the way. There is a PDF available online, but there's just something, I think that you absorb more when you read it off of a page.
Well, if it's as important as everyone has led me to believe, it's the kind of thing you sit down with a fine point pen and annotate the margins.
Absolutely. And be prepared to loan it around if you can and try to get other people to wake up to what we're dealing with. This, I don't know if you were reading the conversation in the chat room when you started, but the slow realization that we don't really have many options.
Well, and in a way, Carol, I think this kind of goes to the conversation I was having with Mike. And I don't know if folks just don't quite, and I don't want to talk down or be dismissive, you understand. I'm not kidding when I say that this is a crumbling empire. It's not some metaphor for something else.
No.
I never like giving ground to the other side. But, I mean, like the people who are hollering for Elizabeth Warren to run, do they honestly think that she would not be beaten like a barred mule in a general election? I think she'd be McGoverned.
Yeah. I think she's more useful to the country where she's at because she can at least speak freely. You have to get so compromised to get into highest offices now. It's
well, and it's
I'm
not
sure.
it's not even the compromise thing. It's the money thing. And the problem, Carol, is that you're not going to get the money, the billion damn dollars you need to run for president in this country, plus billion plus. By adhering to FDR-esque progressive principles, because and this ties in with the topic we were discussing, because the class that has the money doesn't want to hear anything about progressivism. I mean, does that make sense?
No. None of it makes sense.
No, I mean no. I mean, but does the analysis make sense? I would love to have a progressive candidate with a viable chance of becoming president, because that's about the only thing that can keep this crumbling empire from going all the way off the damn rails.
I think the people that are supporting Warren for president think that there's going to be some big populist movement to get that done. And this is where I agree with Mike, but where I agree with you, as long as the cable's still on, much of America's not going to be paying attention. And that's the biggest problem, is the apathy, even of people who are desperately trying to survive on a day-to-day basis. They're not paying attention because they can be distracted by things such as cable TV. And
well, they've also had, Kevin, they've also had a generation of, and this is a multi-layered problem. They've had a generation of having the idea that Social Security is bad, that taking care of the poor is bad. They've had it hammered into them, and because there is not a really vibrant, and I don't want to take anything away from people like our dear friend Mike Malloy or anybody else working the progressive side of the radio street, but there is not a vibrant nationwide broad spectrum coverage of voices saying, no, Social Security is worth saving. There's not a broad spectrum of broadcast voices saying, hey, we really need universal single-payer health care, and America can do it. And that's, you know, that's another part of the problem. There are so many places where progressives have abandoned the field, and media and broadcast are one of them. And the thing is, it doesn't have to be that way, because the heart and soul of it could be pure red, white, and blue Americanism. Not yes we can, but we can do it. This is the country that went to the moon, and that means we can solve our health care crisis. This is the country that went to the moon, and that means we can take care of our elderly. This is the country that went to the moon, and that means we can build a transcontinental maglev railroad train. But it goes back to the fact that that you can't convince anybody that having that national broad spectrum media presence is worth paying for. And by anybody, I mean any of the so-called left wing money.
Well, look what Clinton did in his term in office when he signed that, I forget the name of the bill, but he essentially did away with the equal sides doctrine, where you had equal points of view on the radio. It's all right-wing talk radio now. And
equal time, yeah. Equal time, yeah.
What was the name of that bill, Bill? Do you know what I'm talking about?
What?
Clinton signed it away.
Oh, the 1996 Telecommunications Act?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was another one of those great moments in the Democratic presidency of Bill Clinton, the 1996 yep. Telecommunications Act, right up there with the 1995 welfare reform.
Yep.
And then there's Glass-Steagall.
And when he's supposed to be a really progressive president, you know, you hear people talking about the progressive presidency of Bill Clinton. Those three things there alone that you just mentioned should tell you all.
No, I was a full grown adult when he was president, and I remember cringing when he said, "The era of big government is over." Because
yep.
You know what? I believe in big government because we're a big country. I think it's infantile and idiotic to think that a country this big can be run on a small government. This ain't 1787.
It's so simple, Bob. When was our population attained its biggest growth during the baby boom generation? Which I'm actually not part of. I was born in the middle of the war, not post-war. But we're going to have a crushing amount of elderly people, and the medical profession, quote, profession, has ways of keeping us going, keeping us alive. Here, take this. You live a few more years. And, in other words, the worst time of all is when they want to play with social programs when we really need them. Not to mention education, transportation, everything else. And they want that all handled by private. All these schools that we have in the big cities, they're run by private groups. There's quite a few of those guys who have been arrested and charged with grand theft, really, is what it amounts to. But I'll get off that.
Well, you just have to take a look at Chicago, what Rahm Emanuel's done with the school system there. Another Democrat, alleged.
Yeah, and okay, so here's one of those little stories that, you can't decide whether to let go of or not. When you think about a public school system, you think about equal access to education for all American students, right?
Yep.
Well, consider the story coming out of Battle Creek, Michigan. Now, this is a young girl in middle school who, in August of 2012, was diagnosed with leukemia. She has had the fight literally of her life, and she's trying to get better, and she's tried to stay in school. Now, she goes to her parents had her in. A parochial school, a church school. And remember that Jerry Falwell once famously said, we need to take education out of the hands of government and put it back in the churches where it belongs.
Yeah.
Well, this young girl, trying to survive cancer, was just recently thrown out of her Catholic school because of attendance problems. And, too bad. She has no recourse. Father Fleckenstein says for privacy reasons he can't talk about the situation in its entirety. But the McGrath family says the accommodations which were made were woefully inadequate for a child with such a serious diagnosis. It's not like she's out at the mall having fun. She's in her bed sick with nausea, vomiting, abdominal pain. She's not having fun. She's sick. She'd be at school if she could, her mother said. On the other hand, Father John Fleckenstein with Battle Creek Area Catholic School said, these were extraordinary circumstances, but so many accommodations were made, we felt that eventually it became a point where we really had to help Rose by being able to make sure that she was getting the assistance that she needed and to learn. And so in order to provide her that assistance, they threw her out of school. Now, I only mention that because if that's how we as a country treat the least among us, child battling cancer, and Rahm Emanuel, for instance, is dismantling public education in Chicago. Look where kids are going to wind up. These are parents who were paying tuition for their child. And they still threw her out. Not for being a truant, not for smoking out behind the gym. So what happens to an America that dismantles its education system and at the same time cuddles up to, and Rahm Emanuel really did cuddle up to some of the sleaziest of the money. Where are we headed?
The highway to hell?
Yeah. Why? Where are we going and why are we in this handbasket?
Hey, Bob. Rick here.
Hey, Rick.
Great filibobster there. My heart really went out to Mike, you know, because, geez, I mean, he's got to really be downtrodden in South Carolina stand. Very few progressives, Democrats there. I mean, forget it, you know?
Right.
Very easy to get discouraged in that situation. But you're right. I mean, I think it's called management of decline. I mean, I sort of get this in my criminal cases because, you know, the people, once they come to me and the investigation's well underway and they've talked to the agents, you know, obviously they should never do that without an attorney, but by then it's too late. And so it's just damage control. And I sort of feel like that's sort of the way that, you know, that's the best way we can deal with the fall of the American empire, you know?
And I guess that's in part my argument is that, you know, when I said to Mike, you know, see to community, when empire really does come apart, it ain't pretty. And different areas have different problems. The problems that say an LA faces are going to be pretty wildly different from the problems that I face here in Appalachia. And that's without taking into account things like droughts or, you know, poisoned air from bombs going off all over the place. But, you know, it's matters of access. It's matters of infrastructure support. It's power grid stuff. Now, you know, what we'll share in common if the Republicans have their way is trying to, can you imagine how much slack is going to have to be picked up in order to feed Granny and Grandpa when their Social Security checks go away?
Yeah, that's going to be awfully tough. I mean, as it is, the wages for middle Americans have just, you know, flattened, and actually our spending power is less now than it was in the 70s, I think. So to have to help out the older folks, your parents, it's going to be almost impossible, I would think, you know? I mean, what I see happening, Bob, is I think we just have to look to, you know, the recent example, not so recent now, of Yugoslavia, as far as when a state, like, implodes. And you just have a bunch of different states and a bunch of, you know, little countries, maybe three or four states, like California will probably join with Oregon and Washington and, you know, form the Republic of Cascadia or something like that. I mean, who knows?
It'll definitely be Northern California, not Southern.
Well, there you go. We have to leave room for Jefferson, the state of Jefferson. I know
Sparky
has talked about that in the past.
Well, realistically, for instance...
Yeah, I saw another truck today with a bumper sticker.
The other night, I had a lovely conversation with Ron, and we were talking about the book by Richard K. Morgan called Altered Carbon. Well, he wrote another one that in the U.S. is sold as 13. In the rest of the world, it's called Black Man. And it is not part of the same trilogy, but it is predicated upon an American future in which the United States has been balkanized. And what you wind up with are Washington, Oregon, California, probably Vancouver out of Canada, part of a Pacific Rim alliance of nation states. And then you've got, you know, the up east, upper Midwest. And then the rest of America is just simply referred to euphemistically as Jesus Land. And it's not that far-fetched.
Bob, I know
no, you're almost getting back to the Ernst Kallenbach Ecotopia novel.
Yeah. But what we're also talking about, and I don't think it's that far-fetched, remember, the right wing in this country is still fighting the Civil War. And that's why for years now, those of you who've been around for a while know the phrase, Cold Civil War. And I swear we're in one. And the ultimate goal is to destroy this nation as it currently is constituted and basically go back to a Confederate style of government. They won't overtly come out and say, we're going to have slavery again. They don't want it. It's easier to not have to feed people and pay them shit wages and call that liberty.
So true, Bob. You know, I mean, that's, just look at where all the money has gone in the last, 10 or 15 years. Income growth is just stagnant among probably 98% of the public, and maybe the top 2% are the only ones who've seen any growth, and it's been tremendous for them.
And it kind of it goes back to something we were talking about. I was talking about with the angry Indian last night, when I saw Hillary Clinton talk with that soundbite where she said, "We've got to make the middle class strong and respectable again." Well, okay. Do we just live in a time where nobody can talk about the poor anymore? Have they just become? Has our lower working class become such an unmentionable that it literally goes without mention?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't. You know, God forbid you talk about the poor, so you could become them if you talk about them too much, right?
I think that's why nobody wants to say they're poor, even though they are. I think that's why they use the phrase middle class, because people don't want to admit they're poor, even though they're in poverty.
Because it's been so demonized.
Yes.
Yes, yes. It's been, they made people feel shame for not having it. It's just so Calvinist, you know, condemning people for what material goods they have when you claim to be part of a religion that emphasizes the spiritual plane. It's insanity.
Well, my problem, Carol, is that I am not a Christian, okay? But the Christian religion has bring in the poor, bring in the weak, shelter people, love people, take care of people, and yet the right-wing nut job folk demonize the homeless, the poor, the veteran can't find a job, the one suffering from PTSD. They demonize all those folks while at the same time expressing their incredible Christianity, and it drives me nuts.
It's cognitive dissonance, and that's kind of the point of studying psychopathy, when you realize that all these institutions, especially churches that say one thing and do the other, are lying. They're just lying. And
I have to totally agree with you. And I went to a critical thinking conference in Sonoma State, probably close to 20 years ago. And my degree is in speech communication, and I understand cognitive dissonance and political rhetoric and all the rest of that stuff. And it is just so appalling to me that our education system has been so screwed that schools cannot teach critical thinking in this country anymore. And that's what we're suffering from.
Hey, guys, am I audible?
Yes, you are, Roger.
Great. I tried to wait for a shout-out, but...
I dropped the ball on that. Hi, Roger.
Hi. It's been a while since I participated audibly on the front porch. Guys, with regard to the matter of what constitutes poor, I don't, for example, have the choices that a lot of people with more money might have. But I trundle along on $25,000 a year, trying to take care of a family of five. And honest to God, despite it all, now I'm lucky. I'm in Minnesota, but I don't weigh my sense of well-being and wealth against how much material I have, and I am not poor. I know that by most people's standards they would call me that, but I'm not. And so I want to make an appeal for the importance of considering framing when calling oneself or someone else poor. I don't know. That's my two cents.
Well, you have a good point there.
Yeah, and the thing is, I wish we lived in a classless system, but we don't. You know, we have a very real 1/10 of 1. You know, we talk about the 1%, but it's not even the 1%. It's the 1/10 of 1% who are running the show here. And everybody else is, I mean, look, there are jobs out there, shitload of them, but there are jobs out there that, you know, pay six figures a year. But baby, you're still working class. If somebody else is signing your check, you're working class. And I much prefer a working class versus a non-working class kind of approach. But you know, this is a country that is steeped in the notion of the glories of the middle class, and we just don't talk about the lower class or the underclass anymore. And I would make the argument, Roger, that how to put this. You're obviously intelligent and educated. That makes a world of difference. And also the fact that, as you know, you live in Minnesota, which is not quite as into brutalizing its own people as, say, Kansas. And I think that's pretty big. Hey, I got a note from our buddy Earther in the chat room. He said, I agree with Tom Hartman. Who is president is not as important as activism. Presidents and politicians, for the most part, change with the political and civil pressures. All positive change has come from citizens. The progressive movements moved FDR to the left. His first campaign was not as a strong progressive. Like you, I don't buy the idea that voting for Republicans is no different from voting for Democrats. I agree that not voting because our favorite candidate is not running is a bad idea. I believe that's your view. Let me know if I'm wrong. No, I just recognize that I'm never going to get to vote for the perfect candidate. I'm just not. The president certainly became more powerful in the 20th century. The Congress still has more power on paper and in reality. All the serious lifting that needs to happen in this country, politically speaking, has to be driven by Congress. Everybody focuses on the president. Just look at the midterm turnout. It's a demonstration of how bad civics are in the country when everybody expects and believes that the president drives everything like the Wizard of Oz. In a way, hoping for Elizabeth Warren is saying, I hope someone fixes everything for me and I don't have to do anything too uncomfortable. I hope someone does the thinking for me. I hope someone can feel good about runs. Someone I can feel good about runs. My warm and good feelings toward a good candidate are more important than real change, being effective, or me getting seriously involved in activism to fix the country. I want to have change, feel good about it, and not suffer discomfort. I can understand the desire, Earther says. I was really enthusiastic about John Edwards. He was talking about the two Americas years before Occupy, the recent cop killings, and so on. I still like him. Maybe it's wrong. Maybe I shouldn't. He was an asshole to his family with his affair, but nobody else, and no politician or public figure, has ever been unfaithful, right? Saying, well, take care, Bob. Earther signs off. And there's a couple of things in there that are particularly worthy of note. One, in regard to the progressive policies dragging FDR toward the left, it is instructive to have a cogent understanding of the progressive movement in this country, because almost from the very beginning, you know, the progressive movement comes out of the Grange, it comes out of the Midwestern heartland, and it then becomes labor. And Dr. Bill is so instructive on all of this. The earliest form of the progressive movement and in labor was an outfit called the Knights of Labor. And the trick there was that they wanted to upset the apple cart. They wanted to throw it all away and start all over again. They were Marxists in the truest and most classical sense of the word. Well, guess what happened? They got co-opted. And so instead of the Knights of Labor who say, we want to turn the table over, you get Samuel Gompers and the AF-LL saying, we just want a seat at the table. And the capitalists sit there and say, well, great, tell them to pull up a stool. And we'll just start carving up the pie, and whatever pie we let them have, we'll just carve smaller and smaller slices of it for them. And that's where you get the progressivism of Teddy Roosevelt. And it gets watered down and watered down and watered down. In fact, if you look at the history of FDR, you'll find that one of his early supporters was Huey Long. And by the time he was assassinated, Huey Long was absolutely wearing the hide off of FDR, saying that he was not nearly progressive enough. So there's truth, I think, in what Arthur says about whose president is not as important as activism. But I still think whose president is awfully damned important alongside the Congress. And you can't talk about the Congress now without, as was previously mentioned, talking about the gerrymandering and the general monkeying around that has led to, a situation that exists now where more votes can be cast for Democrats than Republicans, and you still wind up with not just a Republican majority, but an almost impregnable Republican majority in the Congress. And that, in turn, is why I say that the first real chance to get meaningful change in the makeup of the Congress is the midterm elections of November 2022.
Bob?
Yeah, Jack.
This is Jack. I had an article, but just as you were talking about that, I'm a tangent here, but my mind goes to unions. And I go, you know, what about the Chamber of Commerce, the national one? And what about the business roundtable? Those are unions of corporations. And why can't people have unions? Why are people so hostile to unions? And whereas corporations, they got it all.
I understand that completely, Jack. And the answer is largely, it largely boils back around to the unrepentant, unrecalcitrant Confederate South. You know, right to work. Dr. Bill spent a considerable amount of time on this. Right to work was born in the South. And it was born specifically, you know, just like when I was talking to Mike and I said, no, the Second Amendment was not designed to hunt deer. The Second Amendment was put in place to hunt slaves. And that's a fact.
Yep, so they could send guys up north to grab slaves and bring them back and everything else.
Right, yeah. Well, and the same thing applies to right to work. Right to work laws were crafted in the South for the specific purpose of preventing freedmen, free Negroes, from banding together to control the circumstances of their labor. It arises directly out of the slaveholder mentality.
And I believe the X or the anti-union was really anti-black.
Well, yeah, in the South, that's right. Absolutely.
Very racist.
Because one of the things that must be remembered is that early union, early labor movements were specifically integrated. The United Mine Workers were an integrated union from the get-go, and one of the nastiest moments in labor history was when the UMWA, in order to put together a collective bargaining agreement with the bituminous coal operators of America, agreed in the late 40s or early 1950s, I can't remember exactly when, that they'd get the agreement and they'd save their jobs and they'd cut down on mechanization, but in return they would dump their Negro membership.
Yeah, to pick up on that, Bob, my understanding is that the AFL-CIO was very averse to having people of color in it, but I think the Wobblies, the IWW or whatever that is, were, you know, they were much more open to that. I know there was a lot of tension between, you know, the skilled unions, the trade unions with, you know, skilled laborers who were almost exclusively white and, you know, folks of color who, you know, had less skilled jobs. And there was great resistance to allowing minorities to join, you know, the AFL-CIO. I think at some point that changed, but I think they started losing a lot of members.
Well,
it sure did change in a modern day.
Skilled workers. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I was going to say back when I was a union organizer, I'd go out to job sites and try to tell guys that their contractors have unions. Why can't you? I'm sure Boss Man Wayne's done the same thing. But our trade unions now, I mean, they're all integrated. I mean, if you can get it past the test and have the knowledge, you can get in.
Yeah, I think, Sparky, you're probably going to see a lot more integration of unions in states like California that don't really have a history of a lot of racism anyway, compared to, like, the Deep South. You're probably not going to see a lot of people of color in unions there. Just a guess. I don't know for sure.
I wish Jay Cruzen was around. He could tell you. But,
yeah.
I know. I've been on big job sites when I was on the power plant. I mean, we had people from all races, creeds, colors, working for Bechtel. I was under a project labor agreement, so it was all union.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think
the
I would think
CIO, CIO was industrial unions, and AFL was a lot of them were craft unions. You know, the difference between the name, they didn't merge. They merged in my lifetime.
Yeah,
those two unions.
Yeah, that was the American Federation of Labor were craft unions. Wasn't Samuel Gompers a cigar roller or something?
Yeah.
Whereas the Congress of Industrial Organizations was, well, the centerpiece of that was the UMWA because it was founded by John L. Lewis.
All the Detroit unions, the auto workers, and, you know, that was...
Yeah, the Ruther brothers.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, hey, a little bit of good news here. 8 minutes past the hour, and I want to thank Kelly and Thomas for jumping in on Sparky's Have a Show on Me challenge. So we are only $90 away from meeting that challenge. So,
well, I got to jump in here.
Okay.
Whatever Sparky sends you, I'll match Sparky.
Okay, so in essence, that means there's a chance to go 2-1. Not just double your money, but triple it. For anybody who jumps in, starting with...
When Sparky gets told that he has to send you 100.5, I will match Sparky.
That will be tremendous. So we are $90 away from all of that happening for anybody who wants to jump in.
Let's get her done.
Yeah, and just remember, because the website is screwed up...
Oh, Ron just popped out. If we get a match for the 2-1, then I'll sponsor the third.
Whoa. So that turns the money into
4-1?
That I don't recall that ever happening before.
It's amazing. Well, I'm sorry to stir the pot, but I just had to do it.
Well, you're a troublemaker, Roger. I mean,
yeah, I know. I've been that all my life.
But we're still waiting. We're still waiting for the website to come back up. So just a reminder for anybody who wants to do this: you don't have to go to the PayPal interface at the Horn. You can always just go to PayPal.com. In the send money to part, it just put in Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. That's the same email address that is associated with the Horn interface on the website, and put in the amount, and then. Click sending money to friends and family, and it will waive the transfer fees, which is extra cool.
Yeah,
By the way, a note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Subject line, the poor. I liken the focus on the middle class without any mention of the poor to my familiarity with the building trades. Building a society focusing only on the middle class is like trying to build a house from the first floor up and down. In actuality, you have to build the foundation first, i.e., you have to take care of the poorest citizens, and then you can build from there. Building castles in the air doesn't work. John Edwards was the last national politician to let the word poor pass his lips. That's true.
And for the record, Hillary Clinton's announcement of her running for president, I was sickened by it because the way she said what she said, I want to be your champion. This is typical politician speak. Laying out, saying a lot, but in reality saying nothing. There was nothing substantive as to what she would do in that speech. And I just wanted to say that because it thoroughly irritated me. But I will say this. If I'm confronted with a choice of Hillary Clinton versus Bush or Christie or whomever, yeah, I'll pull the lever for Hillary Clinton, principally because of what you said.
Well, so, Kevin, so many of the arguments are kind of tired.
Yeah, exactly.
But they remain real. One of these days, and I don't want to sound mean or gross or hateful or anything, unless I mean to be. One of these days,
hello,
Fat Tony Scalia has got to shuffle off this mortal coil.
Oh, I thought you were going to say die.
So, that's the same phrase, Larry.
I know.
same. You know, one of these. I don't know. One of these days, maybe Slappy Thomas will reach for that can of Coca-Cola and maybe choke on one of those hairs.
Bob.
I just want you to take a minute and imagine the Supreme Court justices that Rafael Eduardo Cruz would appoint, or how about Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head? Oh, that'd be some real legal scholars, wouldn't it?
The first appointment of Ted Cruz will be Judge Roy Moore from Alabama.
And if he's got just the right kind of Senate, he'll sail right through.
Yep.
Well, see, that's because he can't get Judge Roy Bean out of the grave to take the job.
I think Judge Roy Bean was actually a somewhat better jurist than Judge Roy Moore.
That was funny.
I mean, Judge Roy Bean was law west of the Pecos. Judge Roy Moore is law out of his mind.
No kidding.
Oh, by the way, speaking of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, have you seen this thing that he did? He had a meet and greet and fireside chat last night. Or maybe night before. In New York City. You know, heathen, demon-infested New York City. But it's not that he had one. The candidates are going to do that, and you got to go to New York to raise money because there's a lot of money in New York, right? He chose to do his fundraiser at a hotel called Out NYC. Out NYC. Which is owned by a couple of gay guys.
Owned by the goddess of irony.
Yeah, the goddess of irony just not only owns that place, but manages and runs it, too.
And
that is hilarious.
And so they sat down, and they had their little chit-chat, you know, Ted showing that, Rafael Eduardo Cruz showing that he can sit down there and press the flesh with with the Homer sectionals and not catch the gay demon. But here's the fun part. Word got out. And now the gay community is dropping a rock on these two guys that hosted this soiree for Rafael Eduardo Cruz.
What the hell were they thinking, Bob?
Well, and that is exactly what was asked, Rick. What the hell were they thinking?
You know, it's sort of like the log cabin Republicans. I mean, what an oxymoron if one ever existed.
Yeah.
Well, in this particular instance, I got to thinking about it, and the closest thing I could come up for with metaphorically was it's kind of like I don't know, Frederick Douglass inviting Jefferson Davis for a little sit down soiree. I mean, the two positions could not be further apart. Rafael Eduardo Cruz isn't entirely sure that gay people deserve to keep breathing, let alone have constitutional rights.
What's the position of his church on that, Bob?
Well, I mean, I'm not even sure what church Rafael Eduardo Cruz belongs to, because after all, his daddy's one of those
Pentecostals or something,
loose cannon on deck Pentecostals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But my
it's
God,
a big rise in that Hispanic fundamentalists. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, it's actually pretty scary. I don't know if it was you, Bob, or if it was Malloy who was talking about how a couple of deeply religious Hispanic Pentecostals, you know, let their child die. They were, you know, the child was sick. They prayed over it. That was you, okay? And they prayed to try to resurrect the child. I mean, come on, what?
And you know what? Rafael Eduardo Cruz would have been right there, and his daddy would have been there with the oil and the reverb.
Yeah.
And by the way, the birthers have completely gone to ground now. Birtherism is dead now that a guy who was actually born in Canada is running for president. No insult to our Canadian friends, but you know.
It's amazing how that works when a black guy's in power, all of a sudden the, you know, white supremacists and KKK have a big increase. And then once the black guy or the Democrats aren't in office, you know, like when during Bush's time, it's like, you know, you didn't hear anything about that kind of stuff, you know? So.
Right. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R.
That's right. But an advantage of what has occurred through the, I don't know, you know, theoretical 8 years. It's that KKK infiltrations into the police, or just racist assholes, have been exposed. I mean, we've seen so much racism exposed during this administration, you know? And, well, I'm sorry that's happened, I guess. That's all I can say.
Well, you know, Jack, it's been exposed, but the problem is without accountability, exposure doesn't really count for that much. And, you know, the sense that I get is that, you know, there's been a widespread infiltration of white supremacists, I think not just in the military, but also in the police forces. And maybe that explains, you know, the rise in police violence that we've seen. I mean, I really don't know.
I can't really argue with that. I believe on Bob's earlier show today, you mentioned about, or sometime you mentioned about the how the military entry requirements have been lowered.
Oh, they went through the floor during the Bush administration.
Bush. Yeah. And, you know, the same might be apply to the police or whatever, but you might get more racist people trained or in the actual services, but at least trained for hurting people. Done. I'm done.
Oh, interestingly, by the way, since you bring up police, we have had so many stories of obviously brutal, vicious policing in the United States, the latest one being the story of Freddie Gray coming out of Baltimore, which is just a horror. So it turns out, and our buddy Scott in Sweden will get a giggle out of this one, it'll probably be front page news on the above the fold in the Gothenburg morning moral volcano and battle cry of freedom. A couple of Swedish cops were on vacation in New York City, and they were riding the subway on the way to see Les Miserables, Les Mis. And a couple of guys on the train started fighting. And there were no cops on the car, and the conductor, the operator of the train, called out for help to stop the fight. So the two Swedish cops proceeded to stop the fight. They separated the two guys. One of them was on the ground, and the Swedish cop was on top of him, and he was screaming, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe." And the Swedish cop simply, and there's video of this, and he simply says, "Well, if you'll calm down, you'll be breathing just fine, don't you know?" And he does, and the other guy's calmed down, and there's another, his buddy cop is sitting there with the other guy going, "Are you all right? Are you okay? No one needs to be hurt here." And the whole damn thing was handled. And nobody died. And the entire New York Police Department just got schooled by a couple of off-duty Swedish cops on the way to Broadway. And it went sort of low-grade viral, even, on Twitter. It's downright inspiring. You know, it does not have to be the way it is in the United States.
It's like in other countries without a non-judicial execution. I'm not a lawyer, you know.
Yeah, extrajudicial.
Extrajudicial execution.
A couple of tweets went out. Maybe hashtag NYPD should just hire hashtag Swedish cops. It would be more expensive, but probably nobody would die due to roid rage and racism. Another tweet. Those Swedish cops asked the men they detained if they're all right, if they're injured. Simple questions show how humanity works. But see, in America, them would be sissy police. How do you feel? Bunch of damn liberals wanting to know how people feel all the time, wanting to empathize with the evildoers. Right. By the way, Sparky conjured Jay Cruzen a few minutes ago, and he says by email, "Deep South Union? Now there's an oxymoron, LOL. I'm at work, so I have to keep this short. Unions hardly exist in the Deep South, but from what I've seen, they'll take anyone they can get. I'm in Florida, which is not, in my opinion, Deep South. South Florida is not the South. North Florida is. I know. Sort it out. It's a different country, South Florida. Here in South Florida, we're very integrated. Are there racists among us? Sure. But when it comes to the fight between us and management, we're all together. I'm not just speaking for my union, either. You see the same thing with the teachers, the firemen, county, state, and service workers. And now you're talking about the police. You'll notice I left them out. Police unions are Republican." So I think that's all we could ever wanted to have known, and more. By the way, note in the Friday on the Front Porch chat, our buddy Ron, said, I'm sitting here cocked and locked and ready to fire the PayPal gun the minute the next $90 comes in. So this is a pretty big deal. We've never had a 4-for-1 match before, but it's out there. Between Sparky and Roger in Northern California and Ron, coupled with what's already come in from Kelly and Thomas, $90 more and you get a 4-for-1 on your kind contribution to bill paying at the Horn. That's pretty darn huge, and I hope that can happen. Boy, do I hope that happens in the next 35 minutes, because it kind of sucked to let that go by. Just saying. And it is about 26 minutes past the hour. I loved the Swedish cop story. That, you know,
I just posted the video in the chat rooms.
I mean, it can, yeah, and the thing is, that proves that every incident doesn't have to wind up with someone's spine shattered or shot in the back 8 times. Did you see the story about the tree they planted to the memory of Michael Brown in Ferguson? This was a few days back. It wasn't in the ground for 24 hours before somebody had hacked it to bits.
God damn it.
Yeah. Wait, whose God damn it was that?
Jack.
Yeah, that was very... We value good imprecations here at the Horn. And that one was especially well expressed. Curiously, it's the very same damn thing I said when I first read the story.
Bob, it's happened here locally so many times. And in New Orleans.
Oh, it's certainly not isolated. Very few people know, this is a moment in West Virginia history, very few people know that Booker T. Washington was born and raised in a little area of eastern Kanawha County, West Virginia, called Malden. And to commemorate, and of course, he was a great man, a great educator. So to commemorate his life, a bust of Booker T. Washington was placed in a little spot in Malden. It now resides in the cultural center in the museum in Charleston, West Virginia, because they just couldn't keep people from spray painting nigger all over it. And then, of course, there's John Henry, the steel driving man.
Yep.
Died with a hammer in his hand, going to beat that steam drill down. When John Henry was a little baby sitting on his pappy's knee. Yeah. They put up the Big Bend Tunnel is a real thing, and it's down in, I think, Monroe County, West Virginia. And there was a real John Henry, and he was a dynamo of a man. And so when the Big Bend Tunnel was christened or commemorated or whatever, along came this notion that, by golly, we should put up a statue to John Henry. He's a national hero. A hero to labor. And so they did. And then they had to put it behind like a 12-foot fence because people kept spray painting nigger all over it.
Jack, can we do this in unison? God damn it.
And then there's the little community in Alabama. Then there's the little community in Alabama where Jesse Owens grew up. Jesse Owens, the brilliant sprinter athlete who absolutely humiliated Adolf Hitler's notions of the master race at the 1936 Berlin Olympiad. Well, folks thought it'd be nice to put up a little statue to Jesse Owens there in north central Alabama, a little ways off the road. Just kind of, and they had to move that one, too, because people kept spray painting nigger all over it.
Oh.
I just want to say hi, Larry, and I heard you. I'm Jack, this is Jack.
And I take no joy in using that word, but what am I supposed to say they spray painted on it? A racial epithet?
Or the N-word?
Yeah.
It doesn't exactly translate to the same, you know, thing, you know?
Yeah, because nobody went and painted N-word on Booker T. Washington.
No, of course not. Of course not. I mean, you'd think that those communities with famous people who everybody knows and learns about in school wouldn't do that to, you know, commemorative bust or plaque or whatever it is they have. But it's like, you know, what the hell is wrong with people?
Well, but see, Rick, in the world of white supremacy, you can't be proud of a cultural heritage unless it's the right color cultural heritage. I mean, as a human being, I'm proud because of all the work that went into teaching Rosa Parks, who had the courage in the first place to go to the Highlander Center and get the nonviolent resistance training, and then come and put it into play. I don't feel like I have to be black to recognize the courage of that.
No, of course not. We actually have a freeway named after her here in L.A. Part of the freeway, anyway, the 10 Freeway.
Oh, is it now called the Parks?
Yeah,
called the Harbor.
It's called the Rosa Parks Freeway. It's like from, I don't know if you know much about L.A., but it's like in West L.A., you know, basically.
Okay.
It's like maybe from mid Wilshire to towards Santa Monica. It's the Rosa Parks Freeway.
Yeah, because the 10 goes all the way out.
Yeah, well, so, I think it goes cross country.
Yeah. And, I suppose, Bob, if I were born there and raised there, I might be able to understand it. But then I wouldn't get the other, I wouldn't be able to compare it to anything else because I wouldn't get the other, you know, I wouldn't get another point of view.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not entirely comfortable with that, Larry. And I know it'll come as a shock to people in Louisiana or Mississippi or Alabama, but there is an argument to be made that West Virginia is the single most racist state in the Union. And yet there are plenty of people who aren't. But the difference lies in the fact that you're raised, and of course I was raised the first 18 years of my life in Alabama, coming up here for weeks at a time every year. And you can't not know what it is. But the question is whether or not it is allowed to flourish and, in fact, is taught in the home. I'm one of those. It wasn't taught in my home. And
I see.
And it wasn't even taught in my church. I didn't hear that particular word until the first day of first grade. And on the first day of first grade, a little girl who lived not too far from me was called that word, and I was called a Yankee. And so those were the two things that I came home and asked Mother what those words meant.
You know, Bob, if I may, on the same subject, those union people are getting too much or blah, blah, blah. When I was a kid, I knew that was about black people. Yeah. I knew it. You know? I mean, the racism was directly correlated with union membership. That's all.
Well, I'm going to stick something in here that the Detroit Red Wings for the last 20 years have played hockey in a place called the Joe Louis Arena. And out in front of it was a glove hanging, you know, a model of a glove. So some people, well, the guy that owns the team also owns this Little Caesars Pizza, so he made plenty of money. But still, to do that, to name it after Joe Louis, because Louis was a Detroit, I think he immigrated into Detroit. I think he was an Alabama man too. I'm not sure. And his was the only name I ever heard in my childhood coming from my adult relatives talking about the upcoming boxing match. I knew who he was a long time ago. And he had problems, too, like everybody else in the business. But I just thought I'd throw that in there so that there are people who have good sense to honor somebody, and luckily nobody's ever torn the thing up or... Well, hockey players tear it up every time there's a good game, but that's a different story, you know. That's their job. Okay, I'm done.
Bob, it's Ron. I just want to say that I grew up in southern West Virginia, in Greenbrier County, which is not typical coal mining country in West Virginia. And my mom and many other people around commonly used the word, the N-word, and I could never figure out why, even at an early age, because we didn't know any of those people. We didn't see any of those people. The smart ones moved straight up to Detroit and Akron and Cincinnati and Cleveland, etc. They sure didn't stay in West Virginia on the migration from the south to the north. The resident Negroes or blacks all seemed to work at a resort hotel in the area.
The Greenbrier.
They all had nice homes. They were well maintained. They had their own high school. They didn't have much competition with the white schools in terms of football, etc. And I could never figure out why everyone was so against these people. And it finally came to me that no matter what strata of life you're in, you need somebody to look down on. And the most obvious group is the group that's different. That applies to the Irish and the Polish and the Newfoundlanders and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's absolutely true, Ron. But remember, the places where racism took hold the most steadfastly was in the poorest classes of whites. So it's natural that it's unnatural, but it stands to reason that among the poor Scots-Irish, it got a foothold. Just as it gets a foothold among, racism was invented to separate poverty from poverty. To make sure that the planter class was had a buffer between itself and its vast slave holdings. And so the best way to do that was to create an unnatural degree of hatred among poor whites. Mm-hmm. You talk about that out migration. Well, part of that was part, you know, I mentioned a few minutes ago how the UMWA sold out its colored membership in the late 40s or early 50s. Well, that was part of that out migration. Because there had been
a part of that out migration too, Bob.
Well, yeah.
Yep. And I can't help but note that in my part of West Virginia anyway, to my knowledge, there weren't any plantations. And if anything, there were very few slaves in that area because everyone was too poor. So I was never quite sure where the roots came from for the hatred, if you want to call it that. I would call it ignorance, but nowadays it's hatred. And it's become part of the mindset in some folks. But I could just, even at 10 years old, I could never figure out why my mom and my grandfather and my uncles routinely used those pejorative words to describe people that more often than not they had never met or talked to.
Bob, you know the Greenbrier College for Women that my friend went to?
Yes, and it was also attended by our good friend For the Earthy.
Oh, yes, that's right. They talked to each other once. That particular area, that school, was that for did people? How is it that my friend, who is originally from Illinois, in the Chicago suburbs. How is it that she managed to be enrolled in that particular college in West Virginia?
Obviously, I can't. Obviously, I can't speak for her or her family's decision. But that was a, and this is one of those archaic terms, that was a finishing school. You know, as if women are made of wood and they're kind of splintery until you send them to finishing school and get them all sanded down and polished and varnished and everything and a nice overlay of porcelain put on them.
And you can't forget the bindings on the feet as well and around their you know belt and so forth, you know.
Exactly.
And you were saying that the men went to military school to get finished.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was the college for women was, if I remember correctly, was billed as a school for the genteel women of the next century.
Right, and see, that was a college, whereas, for instance, the higher education that my grandmother got, she went to a normal school.
Teaching school.
Which was, normal schools were schools to teach teachers how to go and teach. And I recently was going through some papers and found some things that my grandmother had written. One of these evenings I'll share them. But this is just a delightful story of what it was like. Because, let's see, she started teaching in 1912. And early on, and she came off a farm. She knew what hard work was. And she damn sure knew what sweat was. But she had a student, and bear in mind, she would teach kindergarten through eighth grade all in one room. All the students just piled at one room schoolhouse. That's what it was. And she had to get there early to get the in the dead of winter to get the fire going. You know, there was no heat for her. And make sure the lamps were lighted and whatnot. She rode a horse to school. There was one bridge she told me about when I was a child that she would come to, and the horse absolutely refused to walk across the bridge. And so instead, and she could try to get off the horse and lead it across. No, wasn't happening. Instead, the horse would pull up short of the bridge and stand there from stock still and jump across the bridge, you know, with the link, you know, stay in, you know, in the same course as the bridge, but just didn't stand the sound of its hooves on the, you know, the hollow sound, what would jump across that. And so, you know, they jumped the bridge every morning. And she had one student who came to school routinely very much unbathed and not smelling particularly pleasant. And she sent a note home saying, you know, please will you make sure Billy has a bath? And and Mama sent back, bear in mind, this is my grandmother, somewhere between the ages of probably 18 and 22. She sends a note back saying, Billy not stink. Billy smell like him father. Him father smell like man. Old maid school teacher not know what man smell like. Beautiful. And that's just, you know, that's rural America. I was going to say that's Appalachia, but that's not. That's an America that is gone. I'm not talking about people smelling bad. I'm talking about, the transition of the American population from the country to the city. And that's going all the way back to when what Rick and I were talking about what, you know, what does a crumbling empire look like? There's a lot of people living in cities now whose ancestors knew how to live hard. Those people don't know now. And what was it? A few weeks ago, we were talking about something called the distribution system in the United States, It's something like nick of time distribution or just in time or something like that. John was talking about it. Yeah. And, you know, every city in the United States has, at best, about 2 weeks' worth of food in it. Now, when we talk about crumbling empires, does that give you a case of the willies?
Yeah, it sure does, Bob. I mean, out here in California, here on the left coast, you know, we're way overdue for a major earthquake. The last major one we had was back in San Francisco, I think, in 1905, in terms of really costing a lot of lives and so forth. But, I mean, people here are just not ready for, you know, have to live on their own for 2 weeks. I think there's only something like, I don't know, 6 or 7 days worth of food in the supermarkets and in you know, distribution facilities. And I mean, all bets are off once you know, a major emergency occurs. I mean, I remember after the LA riots, we had National Guardsmen patrolling downtown LA in tanks. It was crazy.
Well, and I mean, look at the lesson we learned here in West Virginia January before last. 300,000 people without water, and government, and God knows the job creators, and business were absolutely helpless. I mean, you couldn't even fly in and out of Charleston, West Virginia, because there was no water available at the airport.
And is the water all better now, Bob?
In a related,
I won't drink the stuff in Charleston.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, I have a related question. How much food is thrown out from grocery stores, or how much food do growers actually throw out, or grocery stores or restaurants throw out because they can't sell it for the price that they are asking for it?
Well, that's a different metric, Larry. I mean, MSNBC just recently had a special that was really fascinating. It was hosted by the chef Tom Colicchio, and fully 40% of food in the United States, 40% of food in the United States is wasted.
I would have said 50, Bob, but yeah, I'm not surprised by that.
There was a woman, apparently, or a chef, and Mercedes was telling me this today, because food came up, and she was saying that there was a master chef that went out and used her own money to buy food to provide meals for homeless people, and she was fined for doing that.
Yeah, she
and was. I don't get it. I
got a little tiny small farm, and I go to farmer's market and that kind of crap. But last year I donated 1,200 pounds of food to the local food bank.
That's great, Roger.
That's just my little teeny tiny number, you know.
But why did they arrest people for feeding homeless folks?
Because it is a crime to be poor in America, Larry.
It's freedom, Larry.
That's not freedom. Not freedom.
Take the Vulcaneers off, Larry.
I know. But, you know, I mean,
Star Trek reference at 5:49 p.m.
Who had 8:49 p.m., 5:49 Pacific for the Star Trek reference?
Well, you know, the food is more expensive than electronics, from what I understand. And people need to eat, and they need clothes, and those are the most expensive items.
Well, one of the things that's always fascinated me is and it's just something I started noticing years and years and years ago. Just pay attention and price compare between milk and gasoline, and that'll kind of pop your eyes open pretty quick. Hey, I got to ask a question because we do have Roger here. Roger, can we have a seedling update, please?
Oh yeah, they're up and they're still growing on the old fence, and the first two leaves that come out are chondroitin leaves, and they're just starting to push out the real leaves, and when the real leaves come out,
they will get planted in the dirt. But they're still being babied with slug bait and the rest of that kind of stuff and not in the dirt yet.
Well, at some point in time, Roger, we will need baby pictures.
Yeah, well, I took some baby pictures, but I just didn't get them posted because I got busy doing other shit.
Damn it!
Like taxes.
No, like green machining and planting the other cucumbers and the squash and building the trellis for the green beans and drinking beer.
Hey, there you go. It's important.
I think your priorities are way out of line. The drinking beer needs to be much nearer the front.
So
yeah, well, my wife doesn't agree with you, so I got to change.
I lose. Oh, okay, beer story, because we're running out of time, and this, just a little bit of fun. So some of you may have heard me mention from time to time the New Glarus Brewing Company of Wisconsin that brews this beer called Spotted Cow. And one of these days, you know, hit the lottery, whatever, I'm going to produce a remake of Smokey and the Bandit, and it's going to involve sneaking an entire tractor trailer full of Spotted Cow from Wisconsin to West Virginia for my personal enjoyment. Well, it turns out I'm not the only one who feels that way about Spotted Cow. Michael in Madison, I saw this story on his feed. It is illegal to serve Spotted Cow anywhere but Wisconsin. And so a couple of guys who run a tavern about 45 minutes or 45 miles across the state line in Minnesota just got popped for illegally selling Spotted Cow in a bar in Minnesota, and dudes potentially are facing felony charges out of it.
Sounds like a federal lawsuit to me, Bob, a violation of the Interstate Commerce Clause there by Spotted Cow Brewery.
Well, Spotted Cow just can't keep up with the demand. They can't produce enough to send around, but Minnesota has the law that says, you know, no selling of untaxed beer.
Oh, okay.
Beer and alcohol are exempt from the...
Well, Biscuit's not happy.
I was trying to get my thoughts together, but from, you know, when prohibition was done away with nationally, one of the conditions of it was that alcoholic beverages would not be subject to the interstate commerce, so states themselves could regulate it.
Okay, and Rick, here's a fun interstate commerce question for you.
Okay.
And I don't know. I simply do not know. I'm ignorantia juris on this. But all these states that are passing anti-Tesla laws, for instance, West Virginia is one of the latest. If I had $85,000 laying around that I wasn't doing anything with, and I wanted a Tesla, and I picked up the phone and I let me speak to Elon Musk for I must have a Tesla, they would say, "We're sorry, it's illegal for us to sell you a Tesla in West Virginia because West Virginia says so." All these states with their anti-Tesla laws, how in the hell are they not running afoul of the Interstate Commerce Clause?
Well, it's just a matter of somebody, you know, having enough money to sue them to challenge the law. I think Michigan has a similar law, Bob.
Michigan, North Carolina, Texas. Yeah. I mean, it seems to me that if you had somebody, because, you know, principles of mootness and ripeness obtain, and justiciability too, of course. But if you were sitting in one of these anti-Tesla states and you ordered yourself up a Tesla, and they said no, wouldn't the thing be then mature for adjudication?
Yeah. In fact, I could see.
I mean, you're a purchaser for value, right?
Yeah.
Class action.
Class action. I don't know if there's enough people in West Virginia that are going to be buying Teslas to have a class action. But,
my thoughts exactly.
No, but if you get people from different states and you do the class action either in Texas or California.
But that's one thing, Tim. You do not want a class action unless you cannot possibly avoid it. because
exactly.
because they're a horrible, horrible mess.
They're very expensive.
But yeah. I don't know. Just apply some off-hour skull sweat to that, Rick.
Well, it's still on hours, but I'll apply on-hour skull sweat.
Oh, we can't afford the billing.
Yeah, no, that's okay. It'll be gratis in this case.
Pro bono.
Yeah, there you go.
Pro bono Hornico.
How much do each person get from a class action suit? It seems like it's nothing.
It often is. That's part of the dodge. Hey, we got to get out of here, but I've got an announcement to make. The first ever four times your money challenge has been met.
Ooh.
Woohoo!
And thanks to Thomas and to Kelly and to Terry and to Bob in Texas and to Sal, it has been met and then some. So thank you all very, very much. That's a huge help.
My money's been sent.
And it came through. And Robert Mistralia kicked in. It was just awesome. It was awesome.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, one and all. And having said that, we will we'll get out of here. A reminder, the Horn Malloy Skype chat will continue after, it'll probably continue to one degree or another for the next 3 hours, but it will pick up with real verve and vigor at about 12:05 Eastern Daylight Time. Right after Malloy closes off, which is 9:05 there. Thank you, Tim. And Tim, we need an update on your maybe some other evening soon, an update on your General Assembly plans, because I know that's taken up a big part of your hopes and aspirations.
Couple hundred dollars away.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Tim's headed up.
I want to do advertising for you.
Tim's headed up to the Unitarian General Assembly this summer in Oregon, right?
Yes. And I want to plug your show so everyone would see.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you.
I had a plan this.
Well, hopefully we'll talk about that perhaps in the coming week. Thanks, everybody, for a wonderful week and a wonderful evening. This has been a rousing Friday on the front porch. Thank you to all of you who continue to support the program so that we can stay above water and stay on the air. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox, who has been working on the website this evening. Thank you very kindly, John. Thank you, and hope you're feeling better. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. Remember, if you have not signed the ACACT petition at act.credoaction.com, please go and do it and keep circulating it if you already have. Guess what? We have crossed 80,000 signatures of Americans who are determined to speak up against the atrocities taking place in Central Appalachia's mountaintop removal zone. 80,000 plus. Big thanks to Credo for getting on board here. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.